Welcome to Vancouver Opera Offstage. I'm your host, Les Dalla, Chorus Director and Associate Conductor at Vancouver Opera. Join me for this bi-weekly podcast as we connect with opera experts, artists, staff, and others to explore the world of opera on and off the stage. We are honored to share our stories on the unceded homelands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. Today, we will be speaking with internationally respected conductor David Agler. David was music director of Vancouver Opera from 1992 to 1999, and he recently stepped down after a 16-year tenure as artistic director of the prestigious Wexford Festival. David has held leadership positions in opera companies throughout the world and guest conducted across Canada, the US, and Europe. David joins us from his home in Vancouver. Good afternoon, David, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Les. It's good to be with you.
It's very nice to see you, and thank you so much for accepting my invitation. I really look forward to this conversation. I've had the pleasure of working with you over those last 25 years. I find that hard to believe. It's been a quarter of a century, but it is. And so anyways, I so look forward to hearing some of your stories, as I know our guests will as well. David, you've had leadership positions with opera companies throughout the world, including Wexford Festival, Opera Australia, San Francisco Opera, Oper der Stadt Köln, the Opera Festival of New Jersey, and of course, Vancouver Opera. Could you retrace your steps for us and give us some insight into your operatic journey and talk about some of the people who have most influenced you throughout your career?
Well, Les, you left one very important institution out that I was involved with, and that's the Spoleto Festival in Italy. But I never started out to work in the opera house. I was meant to be a church musician. And I went to Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey, which, as you know, has a famous, famous choir. And in my early days at Princeton, I got to sing with the New York Philharmonic, the Philadelphia Orchestra, with Leonard Bernstein and Stokowski and Ormandy. And I got to play for these guys. Rehearsals when they would come to campus to rehearse Missa Solemnis or whatever. But I was meant to train choir boys and play When Morning Gildeth the Sky every Sunday morning. I thought that was my life's work. Westminster Choir was invited to the Spoleto Festival in Italy, and I went along as the pianist. I would have been in my very early 20s. We arrived, and they were short a pianist for the ballet, and that was Jerry Robinson of West Side Story fame. And all of a sudden, I was playing ballet class, like five bars of three and all that. I'd never done that in my life. Then it even got more complicated because Giancarlo Menotti was doing his Vietnam opera called Tamu Tamu. And he said he got into a fight with John Mocheri, the conductor who walked out of town. And Maestro Menotti said, David, you must conduct my opera. And 3 days later, I learned it and conducted it. And that's, I mean, talk about a change. And I continued to work for Spoleto for many years. In fact, I ended up 1 year as the acting general director of it. I was entirely too young and I was terrible at it. But it did kind of indicate to me that my initial career ambitions were probably not the correct ones. And so after, oh, it was wonderful because I got to work with Visconti. His very, very last opera was done at Spoleto in those days, Manon Lescaut, conducted by the legendary Thomas Schippers. And then the next year, I assisted on Lulu of Alban Berg with none other than Roman Polanski as the director. So the years went by and Kurt Herbert Adler in San Francisco had heard about me and he invited me to conduct in spring opera. And it was Elegy for Young Lovers of Hense. And somehow, Les, I don't know why, I got associated with doing all these contemporary scores. So that's sort of how I began. Kurt, after I went to San Francisco to do Elegy, he invited me back for Death in Venice of Benjamin Britten. Talk about an opera about a pandemic. And then he offered me a permanent position in the Opera House in San Francisco, where my first job was to develop the new San Francisco Opera Orchestra. In those days, the San Francisco Symphony played for the opera, but they built the new Opera House there and the new Symphony Hall there, and the musicians had to decide. So we started our own orchestra, which, as you know, is something I've been doing. It's been a theme in my musical career.
I didn't realize it was to start the orchestra. I just imagined that San Francisco always had the two orchestras going side by side.
Oh, no. The opera season in San Francisco would begin in early September, and it would end in very early December when the symphony season began because we used the same theater. Those were great years. And when you asked me about people that influenced me, I'd have to say the two men, one involved with San Francisco and the other in Spoleto, Giancarlo Menotti, the great composer, and Kurt Herbert Adler, who I learned almost everything I know about running an opera house. He was a brutal and demanding boss, but boy, he was a great teacher. And so after that, I was offered the chief conductorship of the Australian Opera, which was a great 3 years. But I have to tell you, every night I would look at the planes at 6 o'clock. I'd see the plane going to San Francisco, Pan Am, and I'd see Qantas and British Air going the other way to London. And I realized I couldn't get off this continent for another 24 hours. And I was young and I was very, very keen to get back to Europe or North America. I eventually ended up as a music director in Vancouver, where I followed by some time Richard Bonning, who I'd also followed in Australia. And I tell you, we think about great singers like Joan Sutherland, La Stupenda, you know, and everybody adored her and worshipped her. And there were lines at the stage door after performances. But when you met Joan in Australia, which was her home, she sat in the green room with the chorus ladies because she'd gone to school with them all. And she was interested in their children. And there was no fuss about Dame Joan. She was just one of the gals. Well, once again there, Les, I rearranged the orchestra. The orchestra had been an independent orchestra called the Elizabethan Theatre Trust Orchestra, which had been founded for the Queen's first visit in the 1950s. And we took it over, it rearranged it, and it became the Australian Opera Orchestra. And as you know, when I came to Vancouver, I spent considerable time rebuilding the orchestra here. And then one of my greatest pleasures, I think, was starting our orchestra in the Wexford Festival. So that's been one of the big themes of my musical life, is getting orchestras to play well together.
Yes, indeed. Guest conducting in Canada. How did that all begin? I imagine it was Irving Gutman.
You got that right. Irving came to San Francisco to direct La Boheme. He had been invited by Terry McEwen and followed Kurt Adler as the director there. And Terry McEwen and Irving had been school chums back in Quebec. In fact, they used to take a cheap bus or train to New York and do standing room at the Met together. And so there was old Irving in San Francisco, and I was conducting something, and he took a shine to my work, and he invited me to Canada. I went to Winnipeg first, where I conducted Lucia de Lammermoor. And I used to go often to, there was a period in my career when I went almost every year to all of Irving's companies in Winnipeg, and in Edmonton. I must have done a total of 20 operas between those two companies. So my entrance into Canada was Western Canada, and I never understood all the central Canadian thing that Ontario and Toronto is the center of the world, because my Canada, my affection for Canada, really does very much reside here in the West. And as you know, I was a music director at Vancouver for some years, up to 2000, 2001, I can't remember now. But I stayed and I've become a resident, and this is my home.
I think your last show as music director of VO was one of my all-time favorite productions, the double bill, Robert Lepage's Bluebeard's Castle and Der Wartung. And I believe it was 1999 because Opera America was here having their conference. And that was a big company premiere, obviously. But you care to talk about that? I mean, I always got the sense that, as you said, you're not really sure how it came to be that 20th century opera was what you were associated with, but you certainly programmed a lot in your time in Vancouver.
Well, you know how it is in North America. And when I began to work more in Europe and saw an enormous variety of repertories that the theaters presented there, and I'm of that school that if I hear Fledermaus one more time, I think I'll kill myself. And I say that not because Fledermaus is not a magnificent work. It is. But, you know, there are another like 200 wonderful operettas. And I've never accepted that the public really will resist contemporary music. And we worked hard at Vancouver to win the trust of the public. And so our way of programming it at Vancouver in those days was to look at the two ends, the bookends of a season. And those were always the mainstays. You could count on box office. And in the middle, we would always say we needed to do something of the 20th century or contemporary, and we needed to do something which Vancouver had not done. So you could find in our season, The Pearl Fishers, which is hardly a contemporary opera, but it had not been done in Vancouver. And then you could see Peter Grimes, the Mercropolis case, and you saw all of the Janáček we did. We did it because I love it. But I also took the theme that Brian McMaster introduced Vancouver to Janáček during his time as director at Vancouver. And I'd like to think that we gained the trust of the public to the extent that they came to these shows. And of course, I'm a conductor, Les, just like you. And I think the contemporary scores we did here were of the greatest quality. And what conductor wouldn't want to conduct them? And so I programmed them. When I think back on those performances, Judy Forth's very first Kolstanichka, which she then went on to sing all over the world. Ben Heppner sang his first staged Peter Grimes here in Vancouver. What else did we do in those days which were good?
Well, speaking of the Grimes, I mean, you had Patricia Racette probably doing her first Ellen Orford.
Ah, yeah, that was at Sheila Nadler and Sally Billinghurst, who was by then the deputy general manager of Metropolitan Opera. We had been colleagues together in San Francisco, and she called me up and she said, "David, how did you put that cast together in Vancouver?" I said, "Sally, it's very simple. I just asked them to come and sing." And that was back on a 67-cent Canadian dollar. 18 months later, what was the cast at the Metropolitan Opera for Peter Grimes? Ben Heppner, Patricia Racette, practically the same cast. The only opera I didn't get around to, which we had scheduled for Judy Forst, was Wozzeck. I heard Judy sing it in San Francisco. Well, you know Judy's professionalism. She sang every single note. There was no contemporary music approximation of pitches. It was correct. That was a wonderful role for Judy, and I'm sorry the Vancouver public never got to see her do it. We did Susanna, Arla Floyd, and if I'm not mistaken, that was a Canadian premiere.
It was a Canadian premiere, yes, indeed.
When I went on to Wexford, Les, as you know, as your listeners probably know, Wexford Festival is dedicated to forgotten operas, neglected operas, but all during its time, it had tended to be operas they drug up out of the 18th and 19th and very early 20th century. And I took the view that the Europeans should hear contemporary opera from America or Great Britain in English, which were neglected. And so an opera like Susanna of Carlyle Floyd, which is not unknown in the United States and in Canada, or Vanessa, which is not unknown, these are largely unknown and unperformed operas in Europe. And so I took it as my mission in my time at Wexford to make sure that the public heard good examples of opera in English and opera from North America. My Irish years were still very, very closely tied here to Vancouver because, you know, I had the pleasure of having you coming and helping me. And Tina Chang, who's on the staff of Vancouver Opera, was there. Teresa Zhang, one of your stage managers, comes to Wexford. And there's been this group of about 25 to 30 Vancouverites, which from year to year come to Wexford. And I remember just after Justin Trudeau was elected the first time as prime minister, there were 25 or 30 Canadians. And so I decided to give a reception for y'all. And that was a year we also had a lot of Canadians in singing in the casts and working backstage. The ambassador to Ireland was present. And I tell you, I felt very, very proud to be Canadian on that day. But Canada's connection with Wexford goes way, way back. Rosemarie Landry sang there. Nancy Hermiston sang there. A long, long list of Canadians have sung there.
We've talked a lot about contemporary repertoire, but you also, I believe, have conducted everything from Monteverdi and early works. I know Mozart is big on your list, that you get invited to do that everywhere. Aforementioned, you talked about Hans Werner Henze. I know you did it. Was it a North American premiere of Tippett's Midsummer Marriage? Harbison world premieres, Menotti you've mentioned. We've talked about Floyd and Bolcom. Is there a particular style of repertoire that you are drawn to? And what is it about any given piece that really inspires you?
I don't want to use the old saying that I am totally engaged and love whatever I'm doing in the moment. So it might be easier to say to you, I guess I would describe myself as a generalist. In fact, a famous old conductor once said, "David, you need to get a wrinkle here that just, so everybody knows Agler, you hire him for that." But I was never like that. I've always been a kind of a generalist. So it might be easier to tell you what doesn't appeal to me or what I'm no good at. And so I find it very difficult to conduct Puccini, for example. I remember that Carlo Maria Giulini, the great Italian conductor, also didn't conduct Puccini. And he said the reason was because he didn't know what to do with his hands. And I can really understand when it's beautiful. These are masterworks, but I just don't know how to lead them. And the other school of opera, which I just don't touch, and that would be all the Verismo operas, Cavalleria and Pagliacci, because they're just so sprawling and I can't understand the architecture of them. So I guess the kind of music I'm really attracted to is that I can intellectually understand how it's all built and put together. And then from that, I understand how I need to lead it. Because as I look at conducting an opera of an evening, you know, as a conductor yourself, Les, you're always having to do some negotiating with singers about tempos and this, that, and the other. But as I often say to singers, you have to understand my job as a conductor is to make an evening out of this. I need to understand the architecture of it such that it's a satisfactory musical performance. I remember Judy Forrest once saying to me, she said to me once, David, I know in the first 5 minutes whether he's conducting or I'm conducting. I prefer he conducts. And you know, that's actually a very profound saying. Because I don't know whether your listeners might understand this, but we need each other, singers and conductors, because the artist needs to be able to trust the conductor that he or she is going to get me safely through the evening. And it comes back to this idea of the conductor's principal purpose in opera, which may be a little different than when you're conducting symphony, but the principal obligation when you're conducting opera is to lead a group of people safely from the beginning to the end. Another aspect of my time in Vancouver, which has given me a lot of pleasure, is I remember being in Banff, and I met you, and I met Carol Isaac in the first year, I believe. And Carol, she is somebody we can all be really proud of. And
yeah.
I remember, I don't know why, I was so intrigued and interested in you both that I think I hired you both for Vancouver Opera right that summer, if I have that right. Is my memory correct?
In fact, we all met in the same summer and we had a conversation. You were there conducting the Rake's Progress. And I wasn't on the opera. I was there in the song program with Martin Isep. I think it was his last summer there, the legendary, you know, Martin, who went to Banff every year. And this particular year, the repertoire was all sort of based around Stravinsky and Auden. And so there was a song program put together. And you very kindly came to many of the recitals that were happening. So you heard me play because we didn't have direct contact through the opera. And I remember you saying, well, so what are you up to? And at that point, the operatic world was sort of off of my radar. The internet didn't really exist. It's not like you could Google things. So I'd heard from people that you were the music director of Vancouver Opera. And I had just received notice that I got into UBC to start a master's degree in solo piano. So when we were talking, I said, oh, well, actually, by the way, I'm moving out to Vancouver and I'm starting this degree. And you kind of looked at me and you said, oh, well, if I'd known that 2 weeks ago, I would have had a job for you. And I remember my jaw dropped and I thought, oh my God, that was my ticket. And I missed it. I missed it. I missed the ball. And then I think you picked up on that vibe. You said kind of laughingly, well, you know, just stay in touch and play auditions. And if anything ever comes up, you know, we're always looking. And in fact, you needed somebody who could play the organ for that Peter Grimes production. So just a few months later, Carol had already started full time with you in the fall. And I joined on for that production. And it was that production that really kind of changed my life, that made me think, oh my God, this is what I want to do when you're singing like that and see productions.
I remember you telling me after playing the organ backstage that you'd gotten a check because that would have been a union job. Yeah.
Yeah. I joined the union for this.
I remember you saying to me, I've never made so much money in my life.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a princely sum, but for me as a student, it was just amazing. And again, everything about that was life-changing.
Many people in Vancouver will remember Milena Janda, who I met when I came to the opera. She was a volunteer at the opera. And when we started down the Janáček line, I forget, maybe it was Mrs. Regeer who said, well, you know, we've got this woman who speaks Czech. And that also established another very, very close and meaningful professional and personal relationship between the Jandas and Carol. Carol went out and learned to speak Czech fluently. And now she prompts all the Czech operas at the Met. A very, very great talent. Milena came into our lives at the time of we began the Janáček operas here. It gave Milena at the end of her life a whole new chapter. And she became very important to the students at UBC, where she coached them in Czech. And she did all the surtitles for the opera program out at the university. An hour with Milena was an hour with a professor. I learned so much about European history and music and political history, what it was like growing up, what was like coming to Vancouver in 1948. They had escaped from Czechoslovakia, and asking her father, "Daddy, where is the opera house?" Now, can you imagine an opera house and opera company in 1948 in Vancouver? But she was very, very, very good to the kids at UBC. In fact, that's an institution I'd like to say something to you all about, because without question, it seems to me, it's the finest opera program in Canada. And it has a really terrific record in turning out young people that have gone on to work, get jobs as singers. And of course, it's led by the remarkable Nancy Hermiston, who I'm proud to say I gave her her very first jobs in the United States. I was the music director of Syracuse Opera, and this young, plucky gal came in and sang, and I hired her for two roles on the spot. And I was just so delighted when the university asked her to build up the opera department here. I mean, it's terrific a record what she's accomplished here. I'm also a Wexford alumna.
And I know you've done many shows with Nancy out at UBC, and picking up on your point about, you know, what a great training program it is, I wonder if you could tell us why it's important for you to work with young artists. What are some of the lessons you want to share with them, people at the start of their careers who are itching to get out of the gate? I've done a lot of shows out there as well. I love being out there. I find the energy is just so high, and people are willing to do anything to make everything come together. And under the most remarkable circumstances, a show comes together in a way where you just can't believe how far the trajectory has gone in the course of a short amount of time.
Les, I mentioned to you this kind of theme in my career of orchestras, but the other is young singers, people beginning their careers. I was part of a team that started the San Francisco Opera Center. And then when I went to Australia, I started the very first training program for singers of the Australian Opera. And when I came to Vancouver, I know you have a very distinguished young artist program now, but there was one which was led by Carol Isaac and myself, out of which came some very good singers. And Judy Force, by the way, would like to remind you, there was a young artist program back when she was a kid at Vancouver Opera. Young kids, they're just terrific. And people can complain about them all the time, but these young kids keep you honest. They can wear you out. They can exasperate you. But I just can't say enough about how professional and disciplined they are out at UBC. And I think if somebody were to ask me what's most important to teach a young singer, leaving aside their voice lessons and Italian and French and all of that, the most important thing they have to learn is to come to work on time and to be early and to know their music. That's the best advice I think I can give to a young singer, because your reputation is all you have. So as a young singer, companies need to know that you're professional, you're prepared, and you will be a good colleague. Now, you could argue, but, you know, maybe this is a very, very great artist, but it's a little temperamental and this, that, and the other. Okay. But in the main, I think those are the characteristics which will allow you to progress in a career. Young singers also sometimes think that they just need to sit and the Metropolitan Opera will call them up. But that's not how it works. A young singer is running a business, and you need to learn to sell yourself, to present yourself, to be special. And so I often tell these sopranos to stop being a humble Henrietta and get off their duffs and go get a job. Make it happen for yourselves. I worry for the next generation of singers. I often talk to people that I am glad I'm not starting out my career today, because I think the next years are going to be very, very difficult for opera, for music, for public performances of music. And I feel so badly right now, Les, for all of these singers, you know, especially the young ones who are, you know, they're like young racehorses and they're ready to go. They need to sing. I feel very badly for them. I feel badly for the orchestras that aren't working. It's going to be very different for us going forward. You're going to have to put your energy and imagination into making the next thing happen, whatever it is.
Do you have any thoughts on what it might be? How things will rebound? What is it going to look like in the short term, in the longer term?
Well, you know me, Les. I have often been accused of being a Pollyanna and see only the bright side of things. trusting and blah, blah. I'm having a hard time seeing where this is going to go. Maybe I'm just tuckered out. Maybe I don't have any interesting ideas anymore. But having said that, I guess I'd say two things. The will to perform and the will to make music is very powerful in us as human beings. And therefore, I am sure, however it happens, we will continue and people will find a way to express themselves and to find a way to sing and make music for other people. I mean, we're human beings. That's just what we do. It is amazing what you can do without a lot. Look at the standards and what we produced at Wexford with a fraction of what most companies spend. Maybe the universities are going to be a place where opera thrives in a way that could be very interesting. I think we're at a disadvantage here in North America because already in Germany and places in Italy, some of the theaters are opening, albeit with smaller audiences, but they have such large public subsidy. Here, we literally need to sell every single ticket. But I have hope. You know, human beings are resilient and imaginative. If opera and symphony music, et cetera, is meant to continue, it will.
David, it's been a pleasure having you on this show. And thank you for sharing so many wonderful stories of your career that has spanned continents and decades and worked with some amazing artists. It's really a pleasure. And I look forward to your Così Fan Tutte when it happens. It won't be happening this year, unfortunately, but hopefully in the 21-22 season, we'll see you back on podium in the Queen Elizabeth Theatre. So thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you. And let me close by saying it's such a pleasure to see how your own career has grown. I'm just so proud of you.
Thank you so much. Join us again next time when we'll be speaking with Hungarian-Canadian mezzo-soprano Christina Szabó from her home in Toronto. Highly sought after in North America and Europe on both opera stages and concert halls, Christina has an impressive repertoire ranging from Bach to Claude Vivier, as well as several world premieres, including George Benjamin's opera Lessons in Love and Violence, which was nominated for a Grammy Award. She last appeared at Vancouver Opera as Donna Elvira in the 2014 production of Don Giovanni. We'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback or suggestions for upcoming guests. You can reach us via email at online@vancouveropera.ca. And don't forget to check out our weekly special features on our website at vancouveropera.ca/offstage. This has been Vancouver Opera Offstage. I'm your host, Les Dalla. As always, you can keep up to date with Vancouver Opera at vancouveropera.ca, where you can sign up for our e-newsletter or follow us on social media. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.